Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Basketball Fiends Podcast, a proud member of the R Esquina Podcast Network. My name is Jesus Acevedo Jr.
And I'm Alex Aguilera. And Jesus, my man, we talked about a couple weeks ago some predictions. We had a little prediction episode and something was kind of right.
We were kind of right. NBA predictions episode, you know, but it's almost like you're a little proud that we're right about this, but then again, we're not, because it means, you know, you're never proud when somebody gets fired. You know, it means it's one person without a job, you know. So it's definitely not something we're happy about, but it's something we saw coming. You know, it was definitely a prediction we made, and which is our first topic, actually. The Minnesota Timberwolves fire Ryan Saunders earlier this week, and I can't remember the last time a coach being fired caused so much of a buzz.
Yeah.
So much of a in the news, so much more so than because of the culture change, but how it transpired, Alex.
Yeah, no, for sure. So when the news first broke, I was like, okay, you know, unfortunately, it looked like it was gonna happen. And then right after that, I see the Chris Finch hiring, and I was like, huh, that's kind of odd. And my mom asked me, she's like, hey, like, you know, the Timberwolves coach got let go, and she's like, they hired another coach already? And she's like, is that normal? And I'm like, you know, actually, like, this, you know, it's a little different this time around. I was like, I felt odd right away. I didn't know, you know, the full, you know, extent of it, but right away I just kind of felt it was definitely obscure or something like that, especially someone outside of the organization to get hired soon after.
The last time something similar like this happened where a coach was replaced midseason and was replaced with somebody outside of the organization was in 2009 when the Memphis Grizzlies hired Lionel Hollins from the Bucks. So the situation is, you know, the Wolves fire Ryan Saunders, and as opposed to hiring the assistant head coach on an interim head coach basis, which most often than not, that is what happens across NBA, NFL, right. Major League, most leagues, they just go, you know what? We'll hire an interim. Let's get to the season and we'll off season. Right. Here's where, and I'm not sure where you stood on the debate as to whether what the T-Wolves did was right in them not in a moving over David Vanderpool from the assistant head coach position. But it's, this Minnesota Timberwolves is definitely a peculiar situation, I think. You know, they ended up hiring, like you said, outside. They went to with Toronto Raptors assistant coach Chris Finch as his new head coach. And we should say, Chris Finch has a history with the Timberwolves GM, Gerson Rosas. They were both in the Rockets organization and their G League team.
Yeah, that's something where it's like, okay, like, it isn't a bad hiring per se. I think Chris Finch is a fine hiring. I think he has a resume that, you know, proves that he's good enough to be an NBA head coach. I just found it kind of odd when you look at someone like David Vanderpool, who is one of the assistants with the Timberwolves. He had came from Portland, and I know Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum had voiced their opinions on that, saying like, hey, you know, this is a guy that, you know, made us what we are now, one of the best, you know, backcourts in the league. So, I mean, like you said, it's a very peculiar, that's a hard word for me to say, situation. You know, I don't think the Chris Finch hiring is bad, but just the way they went about it, I felt like could have been a little bit better.
And I guess also we should preface for those that don't happen to know, but David Vanderpool is black and Chris Finch is white. So that's why this caused a lot of turmoil, because, you know, a lot of people in the NBA circle saw it as another instance of a black coach not getting an opportunity to become a head coach, essentially being passed over or getting snubbed. And I mean, yeah, you know, like you said, Vanderpool, he has the resume of somebody who deserves to be a head coach. He actually interviewed for the position, for the T-Wolves head coaching positions and for other positions in the offseason, last offseason, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, I go back to say, I think this is not, to me, at least, I didn't see it with those eyes. You know, first of all, the T-Wolves have a very diverse front office. You know, their executive vice president of basketball operations is Indian. Their assistant general manager is black. Their vice president of communications and engagement is a woman. Not to mention that the GM, Gerson Rosas,
yeah, no, you do make a
Hispanic.
Yeah, no, you do definitely make a good point. That front office is pretty diverse. But also, too, I think when the NBCA makes a statement on it, that's where you're kind of like, okay, this is, you know, odd. You know, that's it isn't for them to make a statement right away on something like that, kind of raises your eyebrows. Or who knows, it may be the case where they had done, you know, the coaching process, you know, ahead of time, and it was just like, hey, you know what, this is the said day, we're ready to do it, let's go and get it out of the way. You know, we don't know the full extent of what happened behind the scenes, but at the same time too, it definitely raises some eyebrows, just, you know, the way it played out. It's like, boom, Ryan Saunders gets fired, and then immediately, hey, we're, you know, we're picking up Chris Finch from the Raptors, not even a day later, just, you know, hours, minutes, you know, after we announced the Ryan Saunders firing. So it's odd.
You know, to be honest, I think what the T-Wolves, this is me putting on the T-Wolves, you know, hat on. They looked at the lay of the land and they said Chris Finch is going to be a sought after coach, because there's going to be some head coaching positions that are, there's coaches still to be fired this season and the offseason. So the T-Wolves looked at it and said Chris Finch is going to be very sought after. We need to nab him now before somebody else takes him from him in the offseason. Because what about if a better team with a better roster talks to Chris Finch in the offseason? You know, if this wouldn't have transpired. And if Gerson Rosas knows this is the guy I want, why do I need to wait to the offseason to hire this man? And just like you said earlier, Finch, he is a great coach. He's a good coach. He's been ready for an NBA head coaching position for some time. He's an offensive guru. Here's a tweet that stood out to me. I saw it. It's from Jake Painting. I definitely want to credit him. These are the offensive ratings before and after Finch joined a team. Houston went from 16th to 4th. Denver from 17th to 4th. New Orleans from 26th to 12th. Toronto from 13th to 10th. And the Wolves are currently 28 at the moment. So it's definitely a situation where he's going to come in and he's going to help them play more, better basketball. Because to be honest, once you saw the two Wolves, it seemed like a team that was just five guys out there with the basketball. You know, and I imagine what the T-Wolves could look like with Kat playing a Jokic kind role, like in Denver Nuggets. You know, and the first game with Chris Finch, Kat had 11 assists, career high 11 assists. So just imagine, you know, what Kat could become under Chris Finch.
Yeah, no, like once again, I don't think that Chris Finch is a bad hiring. I think he's gonna be a very solid coach. I mean, those stats are there that you brought up. You see the effect, you know, that he has, with teams, especially with the Toronto Raptors, and most recently, of course, they won, you know, a championship, a couple years back. But at the same time, too, the details are just kind of murky of how this hiring process, you know, went. And once again, I'm not gonna try and jump to any conclusions, you know, until like the full details, if they do ever come out,
right?
But just the way it played out just still kind of rubs me the wrong way, kind of raises some eyebrows, where it's kind of like, it looks a little sketchy. But at the same time, we don't know the full extent of what really went on behind the scenes.
It's a situation that, you know, it doesn't happen too often. You know, like I said, more than a decade ago when something similar happened, at least in the NBA. But I will say this. I almost guarantee that David Vanderpool will get a head coaching job next season. That's my next prediction to come. From this.
Not season going to be like, hey, Vanderpool's still on the table, so let's see.
All right. Because he has the resume. You know, it just didn't happen for him with the T-Wolves, but I predict he'll be a head coach for next season, which we still got ways to go. But yeah, something else, another recent prediction we made that also came true was we both predicted that Zach LaVine should be an All-Star, and it came true. Zach LaVine will be an Eastern Conference All-Star, and that is our second topic, which is the All-Star selections and the snubs. First of all, Alex, just your initial thoughts when you saw the All-Star selections.
For the most part, I thought the field was fine. I didn't have too many problems with it. There were some guys where I was kind of like, I think, Jaylen Brown didn't necessarily stand out to me from the East, or actually even Zion, you know, from the West. In this case, I was going to bring up Devin Booker, that he wasn't an All-Star, but it just broke that.
It just broke, yes.
That he's going to be an All-Star reserve replacing Anthony Davis because he has that calf strain. So I'm cool with that. It's all good. But I'm a little skeptical about, you know, the Jaylen Brown selection. I mean, don't get me wrong, he is having, you know, a pretty solid year, but you know, the Celtics aren't where we expected them to be. And also in the case with Zion Williamson, he's having a nice year as well, but once again, the Pelicans aren't, you know, necessarily doing well in the West, and were, you know, in the bubble last year, you know, they tried to make a little playoff run, but once again, not a team where we expected them to be. And then also too, Damian Lillard, I think the most obvious one now being that Damian Lillard wasn't a starter.
Yeah.
Luka Doncic, you know, got that honor, which, I mean, once again, I think Luka Doncic is an all-star, but just the year that Damian Lillard's having and the season that the Blazers are having compared to the Mavericks, I think he was more deserving.
Yeah, I know there was, I think for the most part, both squads are what I would have expected. You know, I did expect to see maybe Bam Adebayo from the Heat in the Eastern Conference. Maybe that's, I you know, I could see Jaylen Brown not making it and swapping them out. I think Bam has have a little better impact on his team. I know that he haven't had the best of season, you know, and I know you mentioned somebody on the Zion that the Pelicans haven't had the best of season. But when it comes to All-Star game, I really don't think about how's the team performing. I think about it more as like individual. You know, what are you doing individually? You know, because that's really what it's the All-Star game. And Zion was going to make the All-Star game. You know, if he was averaging 15 points per game, he was going to make the All-Star game. And Zion Williamson, you know, so... but yeah, another one that I thought should have made it was Mike Conley. I really thought I was going to see Mike Conley, you know, especially because he's well respected in the league. And I know, you know, he's someone you said that you've always, you know, pulled for because you like his game. And yeah, he has that was surprising. And it's not the first time Mike Conley has been right on the edge of All-Star selection, you know. Another one that I thought, not that I'm surprised he didn't make it, but would have been a surprise if he had make it, but he had the stats, was De'Aaron Fox from the Kings.
Yeah. I actually forgot about De'Aaron Fox.
But I think it's still too much competition for as far as positions at that position, which actually brings me up a good point is, do you think the All-Star roster should be expanded from 24 players to 30?
Ooh.
I mean, because the league is as talented as it's ever been. There's so much individual talent across the league that, you know, you could legitimately say, okay, we're going to select 15 players from each conference, you know. And think about it. NBA rosters are typically 15 deep, sometimes 17 if you have two-way players. So why not just match what's already every team carries already? So it'll be fun. And plus, players will play a little less minutes, you know, so less impact. You know, it is the All-Star. You want to take it light. So
yeah,
what do you think?
I actually am not opposed to that. I kind of forget that it isn't 15 guys, you know, on each All-Star squad. I'm not opposed to that by any means. I think that's a great idea. I think you mentioned good points where, you know, less strain on guys on teams that are looking to make a playoff push to, you know, contend for a title. Because once again, you know, it's like the ultimate pickup game. You know, that's what the All-Star game is. And I think now, even with the new format that they have now that they had introduced in 2020 with the set score, which I thought was great. I didn't expect it to work like that, but, you know, it just made for an exciting ending. So, yeah, I think, you know, I think eventually that's something the NBA should really look into to sort of expand the All-Star rosters, because I feel like we've had it year in and year out where we have these discussions of, man, this guy got snubbed. It's like, hey, you know, just expand the rosters a little bit more and just make everybody happy.
Yeah. And also I definitely want to see the how the teams are going to break down. You know, I think who are the team captains this year?
LeBron and Kevin Durant.
So, yeah, it's definitely going to make you see how the selections go down. I'm not really more so who got picked first or last. I just like to see the final breakdown. You know?
Right.
Because, I mean, any of these players could be number one or two, three, four, right? It's just more about the end, like the final roster. So.
For sure, most definitely.
Then from that, we go to our next topic, which is where there might be some possible All-Stars hiding right now, which is the G League. The G League is well underway, already playing this season in a bubble in Orlando. Now, what's intriguing about this season, Alex, is that there's a team playing in the league that isn't associated with any NBA team. It's really the NBA's team, and that's the G League Ignite. This team is a mixture of prospects, NBA veterans, journeymen, and younger guys searching for their first, or in sometimes case, their NBA chance, first NBA chance, or their next NBA chance. But what's really quite interesting is the prospects, which the prospects on the team, the 8-19, which right now they have six prospects. These are players that have elected to skip college and instead play 1 year of G League basketball. Now, after this first year, they'll become eligible for the draft. And I definitely want to hear your thoughts, Alex, but I definitely think this is the right step for the NBA. And I'm excited to see the future of this project as it continues to develop.
Yeah, no, when I first heard about the team, I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Like, this is sort of like this alternative, you know, gateway pipeline, whatever you want to call it, for guys, you know, to get to the NBA. And of course, all the controversy with the NCAA, you know, player likeness and whatnot, for players that kind of don't want to have to deal with that, it's just like, hey, you know what, I want to focus on my game. I don't want to have to worry about school or none of that stuff. I just want to basically take a year and prepare for the NBA draft. I think it's a great idea. And just to
plus
have,
they get paid.
Yeah,
they get paid. One highly touted player, Jalen Green.
Yes,
according to the Washington Post, he has a salary that reportedly exceeds $500,000. I mean, that's, you know, college or $500,000. If you're coming from a place of low economic impact, that's a lot of money that you can use. And I mean, if you're already going to jump to the NBA, if you're going to be one and done, why not just make that jump to the G League Ignite? I think that's what we're going to see. This is only six players did it this year. But I think in the future, it's going to be in the more. Because the other great thing is that it allows them to grow up and become an adult. You know, I think it was on NBA The Jump that did this short package on the Ignite. And there were some players talking on there saying, you know, this is my first time living by myself. I have to cook for myself. I have to wash for myself. I have to pay my bills. He's like, I mean, I'm growing up. Like, being in this team in the G League, I'm becoming an adult. And I don't know if I would have those same learning experiences in college, which is true.
Yeah, no, I did. That's what I mean. Like, even stuff like that you don't normally think about. It's like, if a guy goes to college, you know, he's on scholarship. So, I mean, as a person who just recently graduated from college, it's like, you have the dining halls, which is really cool. It's convenient. You know, you have your laundry rooms like right below you. So it's just, you know, easy, you know, 1, 2, 3, you don't have to worry about cooking their first year. My freshman year, I didn't have to cook. It was fantastic. And they had some of the dining halls that had some decent food. But, you know, but beside the fact, I think this is just a really, you know, cool opportunity for guys that, you know, just want to kind of, I don't want to put words in their mouths, but just kind of like, you know, grow up and just say, hey, you know, I'm ready to take this next step in my life. You know, just take ownership of, you know, what they want to do with their lives. And I think this G League Ignite team is sort of that opportunity, you know, for them to do something like that.
And I think it's the right decision, because I think at the time when there was a whole rush of a lot of high school players jumping straight from high school to the NBA, a lot of them were not ready. No. A lot of them were just not ready. No. You know, it takes a special player to make that jump and be a success. So since the one and done has been implemented, most players will just go to college 1 year, have a great year, and then, you know, be drafted. But since the one and done has been implemented, 12 draft picks have skipped college. 12 potential draft picks skipped college. Of those 12, only LaMelo Ball was a top 3 pick. And none to date have become an all-star. I think LaMelo Ball has a good chance of becoming the first all-star. But yeah, none. So, you know, it goes to tell you that maybe if those players, if the G League Ignite had been available, they would have gone that route as opposed to go play their trade overseas. You know, it would have been maybe a better chance of success. But I think overall, I think this is a great plan for the future of the league. And it's, I wonder if we'll see in the future, maybe in a couple of seasons, a G League Ignite where it's just full of prospects. Like, it's just the 15 people are prospects from high school.
Yeah. And the fact that just even a guy like Jalen Green, the first year, he was like, what, a number 2 prospect out of, you know, the ESPN 100. In first year, he's already saying, hey, I want to, you know, try this out. So it's already got, you know, a little momentum going. And, you know, I don't see why not. It could only grow even more, you know, for that matter. So definitely, I think it's nice for, you know, guys coming out of high school to have that option, you know, just if they don't want to go to school, they don't want to go to school. That's their choice. Coming out of high school, you're 17, 18 years old. You're a young adult. You know, it's just nice that, you know, players, I hope moving forward, you know, can have that option in front of them.
And if I'm not mistaken, and I think this will be my last thought on this topic. If I'm not mistaken, I think I read that players that choose to go to the Ignite, they still get an option to go to college. The NBA will still provide them scholarship. I'll have to double check on that. I hope I'm not getting my programs mixed up. But I think, you know, yeah, just to close it out, I think it allows a player in high school, it makes your decision for you. You know, you don't have to pick a college. You can all get all these layers. I mean, you can be in your junior year thinking, I already know I'm going to the G League Ignite. I'm not even going to mess with college. That's great, but I'm already going because I can get paid. I can help my family. And I think overall, that's a big improvement. I know in that same Washington Post story that I mentioned earlier, when the G League first started, they were paying players $125,000. Which is, you know, that's great money for me, great money for you, I'm sure. But for an NBA player, you know, and all that it requires.
For a kid come out of high school?
Eh. Right. But you know, it also wasn't attracting, because, I mean, let's be honest, some colleges were giving more to players, you know?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We can get in, that's a whole different subject we can get into, right?
That's for another day.
That's for another day. But yeah, but now when you start offering big contracts like $500,000 or, you know, even a little less than $500,000, if you know you have the talent, just go make your money in the G League, have a great year, and you'll still get drafted and you'll have that experience of playing with some NBA-like professionals, people that have played in the NBA.
Brian Shaw's the head coach, man. Like, dude's a, what is it, I think a 5-time NBA champ. He's been on, you know, a bunch of NBA benches as an assistant coach, so... I mean, it's just that great, like I've been saying so much, just this great opportunity for guys to get their feet wet in the NBA.
Now, from one of the new feature programs in the NBA, we're going to go to something that's really, really in the future, which is something that I just learned about this week. And I hope I still comprehend what it is. And it's NBA Top Shot. And here's the best way that I can describe it. And then we can discuss about this. So NBA Top Shot is a digital car of an NBA highlight play, such as Zion Williams getting his first block, LeBron James hitting a game winner, just to name a few. So people collect the video player highlights car, and they're called moments. And they buy the packet, like a trading car. And in these packets, you'll have these highlights, where they're called moments. So people keep them, and they want the best ones and hope that they will increase in value. So it's sort of like a digital trading car.
Yeah.
Right, but it's what do you make of NBA Top Shot, Alex?
Very much so like a trading card, but just in video form. I believe that's what James Dato, I hope I'm not butchering his name, he wrote an article for it on SB Nation trying to sort of break it down for those
for the casuals like us.
Right, who aren't into the whole trading card, you know, cryptocurrency type of deal. And of course cryptocurrency is the rage
Blockchain, yeah.
Yeah.
Blockchain is making NBA Top Shot possible.
Mm-hmm. And I think I had seen, like, there was a Zion clip that went for, like, $250,000, like a house, pretty much, just for that one clip. So I guess the hope is that, like you said, like we mentioned, where it's like a trading card where, hey, if you get the rights to this clip, you know, sometime down the road, like some of these guys that were collecting Pokemon cards back in 1995, right. 1996.
But see, and that's the interesting part is that, if you own one of these moments, you don't own the rights to the video. You just have the moments highlights. And here's where I was having trouble understanding this. Most of these highlights, I can just go find on YouTube, right? Dang. So I was saying, what's the value? So someone broke it down like this. It's like if you see a trading card of a basketball player, right, and they're dunking. I can find that clip online, take a picture, but that picture doesn't have the same value as the trading card. So that's a good way to kind of break it down as far as what the NBA Top Shot is and what people see in it. And yeah, people are some of these Top Shot top moments are going for crazy prices. Like you said, the price of a house, that is just
yeah, just the uniqueness of the clip. It's like you're not gonna pick that up on YouTube. You're not gonna be able to, you know, snag it on like a Google Images or whatever. So I can see the appeal to it, especially now. Do I think it's gonna last? at this point, I don't even know. Like, I'm no expert in cryptocurrency. My brother kind of does it a little bit. I'll ask him some stuff. So, hey, if a dog cryptocurrency can shoot up to the moon in 1 week, then hell, why not some basketball highlights?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Sports cars have seen a boom in the past couple of years. The Ringer even has a trading car podcast in its rotation. So it's interesting. And I wonder if the 2020 pandemic had a boost because so many people were home and just, you know, maybe some people discovered trading cards. But here's what I find interesting about NBA Top Shot. It's future potential. So NBA Top Shot is a creation. It's a partnership between the NBA and Dapper Labs. So Dapper Labs also has a marketplace where people who own the NBA Top Shots, they can buy, sell, or trade moments. And here's what I found interesting from an ESPN article. Here's what they wrote. There are plans for growth as Dapper Labs is preparing a rollout of games to be played with the Top Shot moments. Their first is called Hardcore, where fans can pit teams they create against one another. The company has also already started talks with retired NBA players to secure rights to historic highlights. The idea of a classic Michael Jordan moment, like The Shot, for example, being released in limited supply could set records. So that is pretty interesting, especially the Hardcore, where depending on the cards you have, you can play against your friend and the trading cards they have with the highlights. So that's where I'm interested to see how they manage to pull that off.
Wow, actually, I didn't really know that, but man, it's interesting. But at the same time, I kind of wonder, you know, I don't know, because we put so much value in these highlight clips now, like, is that gonna regress moving forward? You know, do we view highlights the same way, whereas now there's sort of a price tag in front of it now where we just can't enjoy it? Like, I don't know. This is where I get a little confused on it as well and what the future of this amounts to.
No, and you know, one of the points that was brought up and while I was doing research is that what's to prevent people from tampering with the cards? Say a person owns a car, you know, and it's valued at $1,000, but he trades it to somebody else for $1,500. But then that person tells it back to another person for $200. But what if it's the same person that just created different accounts and they're just raising the value themselves by trading it?
Well, I had read too that certain clips, like there's only a limited amount, and I guess the clip itself is like encrypted. So like once you have it, like it's your own, like you kind of sort right. of like have Correct. The rights to it.
Similar, like not the rights, but I definitely see where you're going, where it's that car is special to you, to the owner. You can't duplicate it.
Right.
You cannot. Yeah.
So I think that's where you kind of work around that, you know, resell dilemma, like in freaking shoes, I guess, if you want to look at it another way, where it's like, hey, I sell it for, you know, this amount. And hopefully if this guy doesn't know his stuff, you know, I may be able to buy it off him for less than what the retail price or the resale value of it is. So it's interesting. I'm definitely curious to see how it turns out, man, because it's just so different, because it's just this non-material thing.
Exactly. You can't hold it, and that is just so crazy. But I mean, you know, then again, we have MP3 players, well, not MP3 players anymore, on our phone, but all our music is all digital, or you know, we're streaming, you know, so it's might as well. It's the next step. But you said something that I think I want to get back to real quick. And, you know, this will be the last thing on this topic is, would this be just kind of like a fad? You know, will we still be talking about NBA Top Shot next year? You right. know, like that'll be interesting. Because you know, right now there was a big buzz right now.
Yeah, it's been around since like July of 2019. So it's been around for a little bit, not too long, but it's been around not for some long. Time. But just very recently, it just sort of blew up.
And I know some NBA players, like I know Tyler Halliburton, somebody, you know, you have mentioned before, he's hopped on board. I think he bought one of his own highlight moments. So it's definitely interesting to see where, like you said, where this is going to play out. And now my concern is, I wonder if we'll still be talking about this 1 year. So we'll have to revisit February 24, 2022. We'll talk NBA Top Shot. That'll be one of our segments, no matter what, just to see where they are.
Right, just to see what happens, if it's dead in the water or it's up there with Bitcoin. So
exactly. So, and hey, I mean, who knows? Maybe we may not even be here. You know, 2021 has definitely been, we all thought after 2020, 2021 was kind of going to be an easier year. And so far, it definitely hasn't for a lot of people, but we're still hanging in there.
Yeah, man, just got to take it one day at a time. But
we're, one day at a time.
One day at a time. We're going to get to better days. The grass gets greener, bro.
That was such a very coach answer. We're just going to take it one game at a time.
Damn, man. One of my life models, take it one day at a time. I heard it from, I swear, I heard that so many times from coaches. I was just like, you know what? Honestly, dude, got to take it one day at a time because, man, so stuff gets hard. And sure enough, here we are in the year 2020, 2021, where it's just been, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, it's about to be March. It's hard to believe it's about to be 1 year when the official, I guess, lockdown. No, I wonder was the March 12th, was it, when the NBA suspended the season?
March 11th.
March 11th, yeah. There's a ESPN podcast on there, a 30 for 30 podcast, about that day and how everything transpired. I highly recommend everybody go listen to it.
Yeah, man.
But
I remember when that news broke, but...
Yeah, it was... Yeah.
That's something we got to talk about when March 11th rolls around.
Right.
Because now
right.
We're just like, okay, we're going to start talking about it, but no, we got to start wrapping things up.
Yeah, we got to start wrapping up. That was, so that's all we got for you fine people today on this better looking Friday weather day. Granted, we're recording on Wednesday, so I'm anticipating we're going to have good weather on Friday.
Dude, I swear if you jinx it again.
Yeah, if I jinx it again, I may have to charge. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to have to figure out my purpose, you know, because that means I'm a superhero or something.
Come on, national meteorologist or something.
There you go. All right, people. Thank you for listening to the Basketball Fiends. Don't forget to subscribe. See ya.
Deuces.